All right, thank you everybody for tuning in again to Church and State. This is a show dedicated to all things Catholicism, all things politics, and everything in between. You know, we're joined at the moment by a friend of the show, or at least a friend to Magnifica Radio, someone who you used to hear a lot from, especially on Fridays, on Fulton Fridays, but he's been busy as of late, and perhaps he can tell us as to why he's been so busy that he can't be making appearances anymore. And of course, we're talking about Sam Guzman, the owner of thecatholicgentleman.com. Sam, what have you been up to lately?
Well, a lot of things have been converging all at once. My wife and I just welcomed a new addition to our family, a little baby girl named Gianna, and she's a blessing, but she's ensured that we've gotten very little sleep lately. I started a new job a few weeks ago, which of course, any time you do that, there's a big learning curve. I'm working with a great company now called Covenant Eyes. Look it up. It's internet accountability and filtering software. Trying to write a book and crashed our van, so that was kind of stressful.
Oh my goodness.
It's just a lot of things.
So you, basically, you've got some legit reasons as to why you've been a little off air here at Magnifica Radio.
Just a few,
I'd say so. thanks for coming on, and, you know, there's a lot to talk about. I wanted to have you on for something that I came across on your blog, again, thecatholicgentleman.com, and it's an article on how to dress basically as a Catholic man. You know, we hear about modesty a lot for women. We hear a lot about, you know, there's debates about skirts and pants and everything, but this one stood out to me because it really struck home. Because I noticed that, at least, I don't think I necessarily dress as a man for Mass, was the particular article itself. So let's kind of get into this. Clothing, masculinity, being a good Catholic man, where do we start? Why is clothing even important? Why does it matter what we wear in general? Is there really a Catholic way for men to dress themselves?
Right. Well, you know, we look at what the culture says about dress, and there's a very egalitarian view of dress. Essentially the attitude is nobody deserves my effort when it comes to dressing up. And so what we see is increasing casualness in all circumstances, not just for Mass. You know, I've been to classical concerts before, and, you know, there's a few who still, you know, dress up in a suit and tie. But, you know, you see people in Hawaiian shirts and jeans, and you see people going to funerals now in Hawaiian shirts and jeans, or weddings in flip-flops and shorts. And just, you know, the attitude now is that nothing is worth the effort. Nothing is worth me taking a little bit of time to make myself look more presentable. And what we find is there's kind of a scorn for any tokens of respect now, which is a cultural problem. Again, it doesn't just apply to Mass, but what we see is traditionally the Church has taught that, look, we are body and soul. Mm-hmm. We are not disembodied spirits, and what we do with our bodies reflects our inward disposition. That's not to say that you can't be humble and holy and wear jeans. In fact, there's two people that go to our church they wear jeans and t-shirts, and I honestly believe it's because they're very poor. And yet when I watch them, they are the most reverent and most humble people. You know, I want to be like them when I look at them. You know, you can just see, like, they're so moved by the Mass. They've got tears in their eyes when they're at Mass. And it's like, I want that kind of devotion. So ultimately, at the end of the day, can we say absolutely that clothes are an absolute requirement? No, they're not. But they are an inward or an outward sign of our inward disposition, and we can't ignore that. We can't say it doesn't matter at all.
Right. So then the next logical question is, what does this say about our culture, and what does it say specifically, I think we could say, about the Catholic Church? I mean, because we do see, especially since, you know, the 1960s, 1970s, more people in jeans and t-shirts and flip-flops at Mass. I mean, what is the inward disposition? What does it say about the Church? I mean, if that's the way the culture is, and we know the way the culture is, and the culture is in crisis, it doesn't have Christ, it's long gone. What does this say about the church, the state of the church in the 21st century, do you think?
Well, first and foremost, I would say it reveals a profound loss of awareness about the real presence.
I agree. Yep, I agree.
And, you know, statistically, we know that. I mean, we know that, I can't remember the exact number, but it's something shocking, like 60% of Catholics don't believe in the real presence any longer. And right. You could trace that back to a number of different things, a failure of catechesis or whatever. But the point is, we don't believe Jesus is really there. And we don't believe that he is, that the Mass is something awesome, something worthy of our respect. And this post, Dressing Like a Man from Mass, talks about that. It says that, you know, if we really understood what was going on in the Mass, we would reflect it in our respect, both in our dress and in our reverence. And so, that's what it reveals to me, is that, look, Catholics don't believe Christ is really present. And I think even more disappointing is the fact that a lot of Catholics, some of them may even believe in the real presence. They just don't care.
Right.
They just don't think Jesus is anything special. It's, you know, it kind of goes back to this whole evangelical Jesus and me. Jesus is my buddy. He's my surfer. You know, they kind of took off in the 60s and 70s. And it really influenced the Catholic Church as well. And so that's really what it boils down to.
Right, a sort of personal encounter. I'm here, you know. And we see that. I think you could even say everything kind of goes into that, the loss of reverence in the Eucharist. I mean, the numbers on confession are far down. I mean, if we truly believe Christ is present, I mean, we would be doing these sorts of things. We would be dressing up. And I think the post that we're talking about in particular says, you know, you would dress up if you were to go to the White House or if, you know, the governor came over to your house for lunch or for dinner. Why is it that people don't dress up the same way at Mass? I think that's a great response you have, and I agree with that, is the lack of understanding what's really going on here. Now, we can get into that in another episode as to how and why that's happened, but what are some ways, some practical ways, then, that men should be dressing? Should we be going to Mass, you know, with our suit and tie, with our bow ties? You know, what's the proper way for a man to dress? Because obviously the men are the leaders. Woman is his helpmate. When there's a crisis in the church, a crisis in society, it stems from men who are weak in some ways acting effeminate.
Right. Well, I think the short answer is I don't believe there's one precise prescription for what is appropriate at Mass. I think reverence is something that is culturally defined in a sense where, a cowboy in Wyoming, I do not expect him to be wearing a three-piece suit and a bow tie to Mass. Like, that just culturally in the West, perhaps wearing a clean pair of jeans and a bolo tie is reverence. And you would dress that way if you went to a funeral, or you would dress that way if you went to a wedding. Now, maybe let's say on the East Coast, that's much more traditional in its culture, wearing a bolo tie and jeans is not reverent. It's just not. So you're going to dress according to what your culture defines as reverence. And we know that cultural, you know, I don't mean to make this all relativistic, but we know that clothes do change based on culture. You know, thank goodness we don't wear tights like they did in Shakespeare's day, you know. that would be considered immodest now.
It would be very unflattering to me.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, that the clothes are a product of culture, but what does your culture say is reverent? That's how you need to dress for Mass. And again, we do know that there are things like, poverty and things that can affect what one's clothes are. But traditionally we see the Catholics have always had their Sunday best, no matter how poor they are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're a humble farmer and your Sunday best, again, is just a clean pair of clothes that doesn't have any holes in it, wear that, you know, the point is we give God our best, however humble that may be, and best is relative, but wear whatever, it shows reverence and respect and honor to our Lord, because he is ultimately the audience. This isn't about impressing those in the pews. This is about showing honor that is due to our Lord.
Right, and I think one of the points that it's addressed on your blog there is the fact that, look, this is something, the Mass is infinitely more important than just any earthly activity. I mean, you deserve, God deserves your best. It's a matter of justice. You know, Christ has a parable during the wedding banquet. He says, look, you know, we need to be coming prepared. And I think that's a really, I like what you're talking about, because spiritually we need to be there as well. It's not just about clothing. And I think too often in certain Catholic parishes, people are quick to judge based on, well, oh, is she wearing a veil, or is that guy wearing jeans? Because we don't really know if someone just came to work. Maybe they're running late. Maybe someone's unfamiliar with the traditional clothing that is, you know, generally upheld. So there's a lot of things. I think you're hitting on some really great points. A couple more questions here. You know, we read, I think it's 1 Peter 3. I think it says, the braiding of hair and the putting on of gold and jewelry, their clothing you should not wear. Certain Protestants I know take this to an extreme. They say, no, we're not going to wear any sort of makeup. We're not going to get too high caught up into fashion. Clearly, I mean, when I watch things like the Kentucky Derby, right, or, you know, when I watch certain events and people, they get dressed up to a certain extent, it's a sort of vanity, right? Mm-hmm. It's this concern with so much going on in the world. Where is the healthy medium? Because that seems to be where you're kind of driving at here. We can't be too caught up, obviously, in the ways of the world. We need to be examples. I mean, in certain ways you could say, I think that our clothing can be an evangelizing tool.
Well, I would say that drawing attention to yourself is the opposite of modesty. Modesty is rooted in humility. In fact, that's what modesty means. And I think that's what St. Peter is getting at there, is that, look, don't draw attention to yourself in a vain way. And I love what St. Francis de Sales, his kind of prescription for clothing, is that go for simple elegance. He was giving spiritual direction to a woman who wanted to wear, you know, she was asking, is it appropriate for me to wear pearls? She was an aristocrat and, you know, had the ability to do this, but she wanted to make sure it was pleasing to God. And so he said, you know, basically what he said is, I think that, you know, the devout person should be the best dressed person in the room. And what he meant by that was, there should be a elegance about the way that we dress, not in a flashy, showy way, but in a way that's appropriate to the situation, and yet that doesn't draw attention to ourselves. So appropriateness is really the key. And I think what someone looks at the way we're dressing for Mass, they shouldn't say, wow, you know, what a showboat. You know, what they should say is, he takes this seriously. He takes this seriously. And I know that he is going to worship the King when he's dressed this way. However, again, the point is giving honor to Christ, not drawing attention to ourselves. So I would say the happy medium is dressing in that simple way, not flashy, and yet that is appropriate to give honor to Christ the King. And what does that look like? I can't give you specific prescriptions. I can't say you have to wear wingtips, or you have to wear a bow tie, or you even have to wear a suit coat. You know, it is something that we have to humbly discern. But I think we have to look at what's in our hearts and try to reflect what's in our hearts in our outward bearing.
I think that's fantastic. Again, we're talking with Sam Guzman, the purveyor of the CatholicGentleman.com. And, you know, Sam, your blog has been getting a lot of traffic lately, a lot of really good attention, and so much so that you were asked to go down to Alabama recently and to be on EWTN's Life on the Rock show. You know, Mother Angelica passed just very recently. May she rest in peace. Talk about your experience at EWTN and any reflections and thoughts and words on Mother Angelica's passing.
Sure. Well, first of all, EWTN, I guess I was just really impressed by the scope of the work that they're doing. I mean, I didn't realize this when I went down there, but they're literally international on every continent and in dozens of countries. And So I would say that, you know, it is an amazing media apostolate, especially when you look at the humble faith of Mother Angelica. I mean, she started with, I think it was like $200, and she started like in her garage. And I think it's really, you know, regardless of what God has in store for the future of EWTN, I think it really is a testament to her boldness and faith. And she said, you know, that boldness should be the 11th commandment.
Which I really love. Well, she was that for sure.
Yeah, and we live in such a timid generation. Nobody yeah. wants to offend anybody. Nobody wants to say anything that someone's not going to like.
Right.
You know, nobody wants to take risks in God's name. And what I love about Mother Angelica is she did that. Mm-hmm. She's like, look, this makes no sense. Right. This is completely irrational.
Right.
I have no business plan. I have no funders or backers or, you know, but I'm going to step out in faith because I want to do something great for God and I want to reach the world for Christ. And you know, that's not to say that Mother Angelica was perfect or that everything she did was exactly as it should have been, but she was a holy woman who took great risks because she wanted to show the world what God can do when we have radical faith in Him. And I think 9 times out of 10 as Catholics, we're far too timid. We don't have that faith. Well, we say we give token lip service to faith. We say, well, I believe in God. I believe God can do miracles. But what Mother Angelica said was that God will not do miracles unless we're willing to do what the world calls crazy, to step out in faith and do something that makes no sense from a human perspective. Then, only then, will God show up and do the miraculous. So I would say, really, that's kind of the lesson that I've taken away from Mother Angelica's life. Is to be bold, be a little bit brash, and let God show up and do the extraordinary.
I think that's fantastic. And, you know, I would even add, you know, be bold and be not, you know, be willing to even offend other Catholics, too, because we live in a day and age that, I mean, the Church is in such array and disarray. And, you know, we need strong Catholics to voice our opinion, as she did multiple times. She basically put her neck on the line. And risked—I wouldn't say risked her career, but I mean was unafraid of offending persons in power, and that to me, I mean, God sees that, I think, and He says, "Wow, you know, He's going to reward that in a certain way," and you know, we need to still pray for her and EWTN that they continue to do her work. You know, last thing before we get going here, Sam, you know, the Pope just recently released his letter on the family. You have a growing family. You have obligations, duties that come along with that state in life. You haven't made your way through this 250-page document yet, have you?
Yeah, I was just kind of joking with you before that. I don't know if anyone's read it, even the Pope. it's a very lengthy document, and no, I haven't read it. And my attitude when it comes to Pope Francis and his teaching is, okay, we as Catholics striving to be faithful, give the Pope the benefit of the doubt. Don't be so quick to jump down his throat and say that he's a heretic. That said, if he is saying something that is contrary to faith and morals that have been established clearly by the magisterium, then we cannot accept that. So, you know, I'm not going to weigh in on everything that's in this document because, again, I don't even know what's in it, to be honest. But I do know that there have been many who have raised red flags and said this is troublesome. So in those situations, we have to hold fast to the traditions, as St. Paul said, that we've received. And, you know, if the Pope contradicts that, then, you know, the Pope is the servant of tradition. He's not the master of tradition. He is to guard and protect and hand down what has been received.
Right. It's not an oracle of God, as some have said.
Exactly. And, you know, I think what we see when it comes to papal infallibility is that when you look at what Vatican I defined, it was actually a limitation on the Pope. It wasn't giving him unlimited authority. It was limiting his authority because there were some in the Church at that time. They wanted the Pope to have unlimited authority to do whatever he pleased, and thank God that didn't happen. And so I think we need to look at the Pope's teaching always in light of tradition and accept what aligns with what has been handed down and reject out what which contradicts that. That said, I do want to say one thing that, you know, I think is, you know, as a husband and father, you know, I find strength in the traditional teaching of the church, and I don't mean to sound haughty or dismissive, but you know, to be honest, documents like this, they don't help me as a husband and father. They're too long. They're too wordy. They're too confusing. And so, to be honest, I, you know, there may be some good elements in this document. But as a husband and father, what I find strength in is just the clear, simple teaching of the church. Make sure that, you know, you're striving to live that sacrament in a self-sacrificial way, a self-emptying way like Christ did. And, you know, I wish the church would stick to the traditions that have been handed down and just stop trying to reinvent the wheel all the time. I think reminding us of the truths that we've received is probably the most helpful thing that we can do right now in such a confusing world where there's so many voices telling us what's good and true, and they're not right. So at any rate, that's I don't know if that helps with regard to this document, but I'm not sure how helpful it really is at the end of the day if no one's going to take the time to read it.
Right. I it's a long document, and Catholics are simple-minded. You know, we need clear-cut thinking. You know, the Holy Spirit doesn't operate in ambiguous terms. I don't think it ever has. And it is sad that we do live in a time where we have to actually give the benefit of the doubt to the leaders in the church, and that we even have to do that. It is sad, but you know, this is what Our Lady at Fatima, Our Lady of Akita, all our prophecies that have said must happen. And so we'll keep that in the back of our mind. But Sam, thanks for being with us today. We really appreciate your insights on this, and we're praying for you and your family. And we hope you will come back soon if you have some time.
All right, absolutely. I'd love to be on again if you'll have me. And I really appreciate your invitation to be on today. So,
yeah.
God bless.
Yeah, thank you, Sam. We appreciate it. And, you know, that'll be all for today's show, folks. Catch us next week, Friday, as we'll be back here with yet another fantastic show for you. Have a blessed rest of your day and have a great weekend. Take care.